This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. It's your weekly blitz with Chris, keeping you in the game.
Are you ready to supercharge your auto repair business? This is Coach Chris Cotton from AutoFix Auto Shop Coaching. The Weekly Blitz is where industry expertise and business innovation collide, revving your engines for the week ahead. Every episode has game-changing insights, up-to-the-minute industry updates, and practical tips to shift your business into high gear. We're talking about stuff you didn't even know you didn't know, folks. Make sure to check out one of the other great podcasts on the Aftermarket Radio Network as well. Big shout out to our awesome sponsor, Shop Marketing Pros. Top-tier marketing for not just any audience, but the right audience. Shop Marketing Pros connects your European or diesel repair shop with car enthusiasts who value expertise, the auto repair experience, and a great relationship. Go pro with Shop Marketing Pros, your ticket to top-tier results. Find out how they can fuel your success at shopmarketingpros.com/Chris. So, hey, everybody, I'm super excited here to have Mark Feuerbacher with me. If you listen to episode number 154, we had a succession plan that didn't quite work out well. And I really think you're going to enjoy this one because Mark's going to talk about his father, his son Hunter, and kind of what's happened in the past and how things are going. This is going to be a great episode, probably going to be a little bit longer than a normal one, but I think this is going to be great for you, everybody. Thanks for joining me, Mark.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Is that because you know I'm long-winded? That's why you're prepping people already for a longer podcast.
We have a lot to talk about, and there's a lot of stuff that you want to talk about as well. So, you know, it's always longer when I get guests on. That's just the way it is, right? So I'm excited to have you, excited to hear your story. Interested to hear your dad's background and how he got started and everything as well. So some of this I haven't heard before, so I'm ready to go. So just dive right in and let's get going.
First, I'll start by saying that we are a independent Euro shop in Rochester, New York, and we have 24 employees. We do sales, service, and body shop, which is a little bit unique. As I go out and talk to other shop owners, I see a lot of shop owners that are just service or just body shop or just sales. We incorporate all three, and that has its challenges. But our background starts back in Germany, like in the early 60s. My father, who was originally a diamond cutter, not for jewelry diamonds, but for actual like drill bits, he got out of that business because the sound of the diamond machines just was very taxing. So he really always had an entrepreneurial spirit. So he went into sales, and that was the first place where I think a lot of entrepreneurs start. They just go into sales. He was selling office furniture, and then he did get a job at a BMW dealership in Germany. And then from there, my mother and father moved to the States. And that was because my aunt had married a GI. It's pretty typical after World War II that these types of things happen. So my aunt came over. My other aunt then followed. Her husband was a Porsche technician. He became a technician at a Porsche dealership in New Jersey. And at that time, you had to have sponsors to get into the country. The dealership decided to sponsor my father to come over. My father got off the plane in Newark, New Jersey in 1967-ish. Literally the next day, he went to work without knowing any English at all in a parts department. You got to picture late 60s car dealerships. It's different than today. He had to grow through that. He learned the language. Again, he knew it was a means to an end. He always felt that he wanted to own his own business. At that point, he started a couple parts stores, kind of fast forward a few years. But that's not really where his heart was. He really wanted to do more with cars and not as much with parts. So he decided to take a step backwards from owning a business. And then he was called by Mercedes-Benz to come up to Rochester, New York, where there was a big Audi dealership up here in Rochester, owned by a German lady. And Mercedes thought he would be a great sort of bridge between the reps at Mercedes and this German dealership owner. So he came up here and he made it to service director. He was there for 6-7 years, again, all the while concentrating on one day having his own business. Sort of just fast forward a little bit from there, he decided to make a go of a car sales business with my mother. At that time, this is almost unimaginable because if you think about doing this today, but in the early 80s, there was still no law where an independent person could sell a brand new car. Now that's not a thing anymore, but he was getting brand new Audis allocated from Audi North America to our front porch of our house in Fairport, New York. And we were literally selling brand new Audi 5000s out of our front lawn. We had three or four cars on our front lawn, and the dealer didn't know how we were doing it. They were just flabbergasted. And my father made car deals out of our front porch while my mom made breakfast for the customer. What I remember, you know, as a 12, 13 year old kid. After a few years of that, there was really not anybody in our area that was representing European auto repair except for the car dealers. My father saw a need for that. We leased a small three-bay garage in a suburb here of Rochester. Almost instantly, the service side of the business was a much bigger piece than the sales, because that was there was just a bigger demand for it. People were fed up with the dealerships at that time. You know, I think there's always a little bit of that out there, but so our service grew. About that time is when I joined the company in like 88. We just kept growing. In 1995, we bought the building that we are in now, and we have 12 bays, full alignment. We do full ADAS calibration. We have a body shop still over in East Rochester where we started our service venture, and that's a 6-bay body shop. And we have about room for 40 pre-owned cars, and we sell on average between 15 and 20 cars a month. We have 24 employees. Well, now I have to say, sorry, this is going to be a shameless plug for you, Chris, but you, we saw $600,000 in just service revenue, not body or sales, just service revenue for the first quarter of 2024. And we've never seen that before.
And that's amazing. We're going to get into it a little bit later. What town or what village in Germany did your parents come from?
It's a small town. My parents, this is also somewhat interesting. So they're both really from Nuremberg, which is a pretty big city in Bavaria. It was a heavily bombed city during World War II. Living in Nuremberg at the end of World War II, which my father did, my mother already lived in a small town outside of Nuremberg. Many of the people had to leave the city. It was decimated. So my father's family moved out to this same town. My mother and father went to the same elementary school. I mean, it was literally like Little House on the Prairie, small schoolhouse, small town, one horse town, whatever they call it. And they knew each other growing up. And then it wasn't until they were older where my mother then moved back to Nuremberg as the city was rebuilt. My father then started courting my mother, if you will, and had to take the train from the small town back to Nuremberg to visit her. And then they eventually got married and started their family.
Oh, so interesting. I mean, so it's quite the story to come. You know, you hear it all the time. People come here and don't know the language and get started and have great success stories. I have a lot of clients from different parts of the country that have that. And I think it's interesting too. It seems like when families like husband, wife from other countries come here, they work together way better than American husbands and wives that are in the business. Now, just because it doesn't seem like there's that much cooperation, I don't know what it is, but it just seems like it. So that's very interesting. Or maybe I just hear about the others more often.
I think part of it is the time too. So
yeah,
my parents growing up at the end of World War II, they were certainly not strangers to hardship, right? You know, I would say they were pretty poor by today's standards. I mean, the house my father grew up in was like a shack. I mean, that's really what it was. My mother actually, as a young girl, helped build her home. Like her and her two sisters had to carry the bricks up and her parents laid down the cement and they built their own home. I mean, that's what it was like 1940s post-World War II Germany. They can endure a lot more because they had been through those hardships. And, you know, I haven't been through those hardships by any, you know, not even by a long shot.
So again, very interesting. I love the story. And so you haven't mentioned it. So what's the name of the little village where your dad lived?
It's called Beritzhausen.
Okay.
It even sounds like a little village. It's
we'll have to keep an eye out for it. I don't know that we talked about it that much, but our daughter's double major and one of her majors is German. And so she's going to be in Munich for the summer and then probably end up there after she graduates college. So I'll have her go through the village sometime.
Yeah, it's really only about 2 hours from Munich. So between Munich and Nuremberg is where you'll find this small town. And actually, that's really where our love for the European cars came from, because Ingolstadt, which is Audi's headquarters, is not far. BMW's headquarters in Munich is not far. Mercedes, which is in Stuttgart, which is a little further, but also Germany's not a huge country. So
Right. It's
like the size of New York and Pennsylvania maybe combined. All these car companies are close. So we really had this deep connection to those. And I remember a time when my dad here in the States was, you know, someone approached him about opening a Ford dealership, and it sort of famously in our family said, with my German accent, you want me to sell Fords? Like, that's not going to fly.
Right.
I need to sell Audi, BMW, Mercedes, and Volkswagen.
Through what relationship or whatever, was he able to get the new Audis into the States? Like, what happened there, or how did he manage that?
Unfortunately, my father's now, he passed away 6 years ago, and my father and I were super close. I really, like, even today, there's things I remember him saying, and I'll say to someone else in the family, like, remember when Dad used to say that? And they're like, no, I don't remember him saying that. He must have always, those were things he said to me when we were having sales meetings and stuff like that. Just little sales sayings and little things like that. So the reason I mentioned what I did is, this could be wrong, but I somehow remember him saying something about he had a connection at Audi North America, and it was one of the people that was in charge of allocating the cars to the different dealerships. Somehow through his powers of persuasion, his sales tactics, whatever it was, he was able to get these cars delivered. And I'm sure, you know, he had to pay for them probably ahead of time, and he probably had a couple other hoops to jump through that the dealers didn't. We didn't have a floor plan. I don't even know really if floor plans existed back then like they do now. They probably did to some degree, but he didn't have banks that were going to give him money either. I mean, this was all, he had to pull investors. He had to find family members that were willing to bet on my mom and dad. He met some friends, you know, he joined the Rotary Club here in town, which, I mean, those were all things that, those community things are what people had to do back then. And quite frankly, I still think it's important to do those types of things.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we've kind of given the backstory for that. And I know one of the things that you wanted to talk about was the succession from him to you. And that's kind of where we tied into the last experience in episode 154. That wasn't so great, but this one I think is a great story. And then two, one of the things after we got together, and we'll talk about that, is your plan for Hunter, your son, to take over. So kind of walk us through that.
Yeah. So my journey started back in 88. I was still in high school. I was washing cars on Saturdays, on the weekends. You know, I was on the payroll, wasn't making a whole lot. And, you know, quite honestly, the first 10 years, it was a real struggle. Like, our business was not, I wouldn't necessarily say it was successful. I mean, it did put food on the table, but my parents were stressed a lot. There was a lot to go on. I mean, in fact, I probably benefited from that to some degree in high school because they didn't have enough time to really look over my report cards as much, because they were just focused on getting the business going and, you know, providing for the family. But I started washing cars. From there, I went into the parts department. My father was determined to take me from the, put me at the ground and make me work my way up. He had worked for dealerships, and I skipped a couple of those little parts of time, but he had worked for dealerships where it was a father and then the sons took over the dealership, and the sons just had no clue and they acted like, you know, they were hot stuff. And he was determined to not have that happen with me. So I went from washing cars to the parts department to running the flatbed. You know, we had a flatbed back in the early 90s, and I would go flatbed the cars in, and I did that for a couple of years. And then I was a dispatcher in the shop. And then when I was ready for service, I went into service. I did not go to college. I did graduate high school. I was not super academic kid, but I was a fast learner and I learned by doing. I discovered that even though I really didn't have a whole lot of desire to be in the car business, to be quite honest, I'm an artist. I love marketing. I'm a musician. I wanted to do all these things that probably weren't going to make me any money. But, you know, my father really just came to me one day and he said, we will support you if you want to go to college for music or for photography, which is what I really wanted to do at that time. However, we really want you to consider that we've done the hard part with this business. We got it started and it's rolling and it's only going to get better. And we will teach you and we will give you all the tools you need. Because my father knew that if I have a sister who's in the business too, and she's very, very involved in the company, just as much as I am, it was going to be my sister and my future. They did give me the choice. I decided somewhat reluctantly that I was going to take that path and go into the dealership. I'm glad I did, because I love music and art as a hobby. I would hate it as a means to make money.
Right. Yeah.
And so I went through everything. Then I became a service advisor. I was a service advisor for many years, probably 10 or 12 years. And then the real exciting part started. My father pulled me down to Mannheim, and I was going down to Mannheim auto auctions and learning how to buy cars. And, you know, after maybe a half a year or so of doing that, he let me loose on my first auction run, buy my first cars without holding Dad's hand. I'll never forget how nervous I was for that.
What was the first car you ever bought at the auction on your own? Do you remember?
Yeah, I actually have a great story about it too. So it was an Audi. It was an Audi 100. I thought I did everything right. So Mannheim Auto Auction, for those of you who know Mannheim Auto Auction in Pennsylvania, that's the original Mannheim, is huge now. I think it's probably still the biggest Mannheim in the country. But back then it was small. It was like four bays and a hot dog stand. I mean, maybe a little bit bigger than that, but roughly that. So I go down and I buy this Audi 100. And back then we were sort of buying onesie twosies for customers. We weren't buying a whole lot full of cars. And I thought I did everything right. I mean, checked the car over. We didn't have anything, any internet or anything. So it was all using the NADA books and just feeling the paint and smelling the inside. And that was about all you could do. So I bought the car, very excited, called my dad on the payphone. And I'm like, hey, Dad, I bought this car and I'm really excited about it. And as I walk up to the car to collect the keys, I realize it doesn't have a sunroof. And back in the late 80s or it was the early 90s, you weren't selling a European sedan if it didn't have a sunroof. That was going to be a killer. And called my dad back. I said, I hate to tell you this, Dad, but this car doesn't have a sunroof. And I don't know how I didn't see it. I didn't even look because they all have sunroofs. I mean,
right.
They really almost all had sunroofs, but I had found the one that didn't. My dad wasn't always this like pacifying for me. You know, he was hard on me too. In fact, there were many times where I said to Dad, I'm like, why are you so hard on me? And he said, you're going to run this company one day. Everybody else that works here is just an employee. You and your sister are going to run this place. So he was pretty hard on us sometimes. And we didn't necessarily understand why at the time, but he was very, you know, he pacified me. He's like, Mark, don't worry about it. Someone will buy it. There will always be someone that'll buy that car. That made me feel better. We got the car back up to Rochester. In fact, I flatbedded it up. I bought it, put it on the flatbed, drove it up. That Saturday, I'm now selling cars and a lady comes in. She said, I'm about to tell her. She looks at the car and I'm about to make an excuse for the car right away. This is a great sales lesson. I'm literally about to, before she can say it, I want to just address it. This car doesn't have a sunroof. And before I can say it, she says, oh my gosh, this car doesn't have a sunroof. I got to get my husband back here because he's like 6'8" and cars with sunroofs have lower headroom because of the sunroof that's in there.
Yep.
So this had a lot more headroom because the delete of the sunroof. And they bought the car 2 days after I bought it because it didn't have a sunroof. My dad did something I didn't.
There you go. If you'd have been thinking, you'd automatically raise the price on that $500 right then, been like, oh, this is exactly what you're looking for. That's a really cool story. Little known fact, I've never shared this with any of the listeners, but in the early 90s, when I was still in college, before I started working as a service advisor, I worked for an auto auction as a bid catcher. We had all the cars coming through and I caught bids for the auctioneer and then traveled. Did in the Oklahoma City area. And then they have a big dealer's auction in Dallas that we would do down there. But anyway, so interesting that we both have that in common.
Yeah, that auction world is something. I miss it because now we buy everything online and we don't have to travel to these auctions. So it's super convenient, but you just lose. There is that something special about it was the smell of the auction, the excitement of the auction. All of those things are kind of in the past now.
It was interesting for us to watch the people bidding on it, what they do, how they do it. You know, you got some people before the auction pulling spark plugs and setting lights on so that somebody else sees it and thinks there's an issue. But I remember an older gentleman that he would check the fire. He would just pull a plug while it was running and stick his finger down in there. And he's like, yep, it's got good fire, and then put it back. And I was just like, oh my gosh. Every time I was just waiting for this guy to just get laid out on the floor.
Yeah.
But that was your first car buying experience. That's good. So back into, like, you have worked your way up. Tell me about the transition from.
Yeah. Now. Okay. So, you know, now we are at the point where we're getting into, say, like 2005, something like that. I'm solely the car buyer. I'm solely the person selling the cars. At that point, my father was coming into work every day, still worked very hard. At that point, he's in his like mid 60s or actually maybe like late 60s. And he would just come in to look at numbers, right? See where we're at. How are we doing? What can we do better? And that was that. All the while, I just remember there was a time where it was always like, this place is going to be yours in 5 years. And the 5 years lasted for like 15 or in 5 years, it's going to be yours. 5 years. I wasn't in a rush for it. I was petrified. I was scared to death about the notion that my father will be gone one day and now this is on me. It's not an easy business. Everybody who listens to this podcast is in the auto industry, I think, to some degree, and will know that this is definitely not the easiest business to be in all the time.
For several reasons. Some of it is, you know, we put these obstacles on ourselves and make it more difficult for ourselves. But it is a difficult business, for sure.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, I was doing all the sales. All the customers came in. They just knew me. They bought lots of cars from me. I have customers still today that are on their probably 20th car that they bought from me. And now I was so lucky that I have a son and a daughter. My daughter, who's doing great, she's in her third year of college. I offered it to her, but she really did not want to be in the car business. She had other aspirations, and we're really excited for her and supporting her and all of those things. But my son and my nephew, I'm so fortunate that both of them took an interest in being in the business. My nephew, James, it's my sister's son. My sister works with me every day. Just to give everybody the dynamics here, we have a couple service advisors, plus my son who's in service, myself who's working sales. I have a couple salespeople I work with. And then in the office, I have my wife of 28 years, my sister, and my mother. And my mother still comes to work every day. My sister and I don't make any decisions without her. She doesn't make any decisions without me. Most of the time, my mom is also involved, but she also, at this point, is very comfortable with my sister and I making whatever decision we're going to make. Sometimes she makes it too easy. She just says, whatever you guys want to do. And I'm like, I just wish you would fight us a little bit more on it for a checks and balance. But so my sister and I work really well together. Her son, he didn't really want to be customer facing so much. He's more of a hands-on guy. So he went into our body shop and he really took to it. And he's been in our body shop now for 10 years plus. He runs our body shop. He runs our body shop with two other guys, and they do really good business out of there. We're doing a lot of insurance jobs, a lot of restoration jobs, and he's awesome. He's got a family. He's crushing it at our body shop. And Hunter, out of high school, he worked here in high school, went to college for 2 years, received a degree in entrepreneurship. He went for business.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yep.
He went just for business. He did not go on the car repair side. My son, like me, definitely like my father, very entrepreneurial spirit. You know that, Chris, from just talking.
Right.
After 2 years of college, but he worked here during college, and he was like so motivated to go to college and like get all of his credits like done. He wanted to be done before he was supposed to be done. And he did it. He finished a little bit early, graduated, and then came in full time. And now he's been in our service department for 4 years or so, actually a little bit longer, maybe five. And I would think you would agree, Chris, he's pretty much ready to be full-fledged service manager. And everybody here respects him because he also came up through the ranks.
I say great kid because he's a kid to me, but he's a great young man. I wished I was in a position he was in at his age. I still took a bunch of lumps and knots for a long time before that. So, you know, hopefully we've ramped up the learning curve for him.
Well, you know, just kind of going into succession planning, I think some of this stuff, right? If you have a service business and you have a son or a daughter or multiple sons and daughters that are going to take over the business. Obviously, one of the most important things is make sure you have everything laid out, like your will, like all of this stuff. There are still so many times where I'm like, what would dad do? Fortunately, I have my mom here. My mom and I have coffee like nearly every morning at her house before I come to work. And we'll sometimes just talk about the things that really are just more intimate. Sometimes we'll get my sister on the phone and we can just talk about things outside the daily grind of the business. But having everything in place and just knowing what the wishes of... Before my father passed away, I did have the luxury of talking with him because he kind of had a slow illness. And so we kind of knew it was happening. It was hard. But, you know, I just remember sitting down with him and going, Dad, what should I do about this? At that time, we had a front area of our dealership where the town that we're in did not want us to pave it. They wanted to keep green space. And they actually wanted us to park our sale cars on the grass.
On the grass.
They actually thought that was a better option than having a paved lot. But that was a fight. That was like a 2-year fight for me to get the approval to get that whole area paved. And it was going to be very expensive because it wasn't just paving. There was a lot of grading and they had to do a retention pond and a French drain. And, you know, what should have been $50,000 was closer to $200,000. And I was like, Dad, what should I do? Should I do this? And I was able to talk to him about that and him say, yes, you know, go for that. Do this. This is what I want to see for you. I mean, at that point, he didn't want it for himself. This is just what he thought.
Right.
I wanted. So having a super close relationship with my father was great because I could really ask him that. And then I still have my mom, of course, to draw on that stuff from. And she certainly interjects what she wants and what she doesn't want, even though she does rely on my sister and I. Now with James and Hunter, it's really, they're just going to keep working. Hunter probably at some point will come into the sales side, although he loves working in the service side of our.
I don't know that you're ever going to get him to do that. It would be interesting to see.
Yeah, I might not. I mean, I was all about the sales because I think maybe being a little more artsy, I was a little more into like the color of cars and that kind of thing. Hunter has really nailed it in service. So he might run this company from the service side and just get himself a sales crew at some point. And that's possible. And James, it's clear with James, he's going to take the body shop, continue to take it to new heights. You know, I think that's kind of the plan for him. So James and Hunter get along really great. James is older than Hunter, but they have a really good respect for each other. They work really well together. And I really think that the key to a family working together, it's communication. It's even when you're mad. And listen, it's not always roses. I mean, we have fights. And sometimes they're really not great. You really go home feeling horrible. But my father and I never let our arguments last. Very rarely did they ever last overnight. Before we went to bed, one of us called the other and we hugged and made up.
Right. Yep.
And we do the same thing between Hunter and I, James and I, my sister and I. I mean, those things come up. Sometimes it's stressful and you lose your cool. And after a little while, you go, all right, you know, I was wrong, or I want to patch it up, and you just do. So I think the key to a really great succession plan and a successful one is communicating. Make sure you don't go to bed mad with each other and make sure it's laid out what we want. Hunter knows exactly what I want for this business. Honestly, Hunter wouldn't even need to know it. He's like exactly like me. So he's going to naturally do things the way I do them and the way my sister does them. And James is the same way, the way he runs the body shop.
And that's amazing. The one thing I would say is, like, how long or what does the time frame look like? And you can't always be like your dad and be like 5 years, 5 years, 5 years, and then 20 years later. Because at some point, as driven as Hunter is, and I'm going to say right now to everybody that's listening, like, I'm not going to tell you how to get a hold of Hunter, but we could drop Hunter into any shop, into any country, and they would be proud to have him. Like, this kid is sharp. I would put him anywhere. Like, if something happened and you're like, hey, you know what? I want you to go out on your own. I could find a spot for him real quick. I might go so far as to say I'd partner with him in a shop and be like, here, we'll do this and you run it. But I know that's not your plan or his plan, but really, really sharp kid. So anyway, time frame for him, like, is it 10 years? Like, what do you think?
No, like, even with my father, right? If my father hadn't gotten sick, he'd still be working today. I mean, he wouldn't be doing a lot. He would come in when he wants to. He'd leave when he wants to. And he would just kind of interject thoughts here and there. He's not going to probably sell cars, but if he were here, he would come in on a day. And if he wanted to talk to a customer and try and sell him an Audi, he would. And if he didn't, he'd go, Mark, there's a customer up front to sell a car to. I kind of feel like that's sort of my fate, not because it has to be, but kind of because I want it to be. I don't really see myself actually like just retiring and like, okay, see, I'll be down in Florida, send me a check.
Right.
I think what will slowly happen is that I can let my hands off the reins a little bit. He's got service covered. I'm always around to bounce ideas off of. If I want to go on an RV trip for 2 months, I'll do that. But then I might work for 6 or 7 months and do that as long as I can. Because I kind of just feel like when you're in a business like this, it becomes such a part of you. I'm sure people have and some do, but I don't know that I ever really want to just say I'm done. I'm out.
Right. Okay.
I kind of always just want to be doing this. Will it be great if I don't have as much responsibility and less pressure on me? Yes, I love that. I take that tomorrow. But I'll slowly start working towards that, removing some of the pressure and always just be around for Hunter and James. And I think my sister feels the same way. She's probably going to do the same thing. There's never a point where we've ever talked like my sister's like, you know, in 5 years, I'm done.
I'm out of here, right?
Yeah, no, I don't think we ever think in those terms. We just think about maybe there'll be a time where we don't have to do as much and someone else will do it for us, but maybe that's about it.
Nice. I mean, it's so great to hear this story and how you guys are moving through it versus the other one that we heard. I got one follow-up question from the old Audi days. Do you guys still own the house that your parents lived in then to sell them off the street?
Yes. My mom still lives in that house. And in fact, just if we weren't close enough already working together, my wife and I bought the house right next door to them.
Oh, okay. So you're right there. Awesome.
So that's why I say, well, my mom and I have coffee in the morning. I come out of my house. I walk my dog. I go in, shower, get ready for the day. Like we had our meeting this morning and then I go over mom's, have a cup of coffee. We talk about a few things and then I get in the car and I drive to work and start my day.
Awesome. That's so great. I mean, that's my granny passed away a couple years ago and my dad, every morning, they lived on opposite sides of the town, but it's like a small town in Oklahoma. It takes like 4 minutes to drive across town.
Yeah.
He would get up every morning, feed the dogs, go to granny's, have coffee and breakfast and whatever, and then off and go for the day. I think that's really, really great.
You know, my sister and my mom, they usually on the weekends go shopping together. They'll do that sort of thing. So we're very close, like outside of work too.
Do you have any old pictures of like Audis in the yard or anything like that?
I have a few. I'm trying to put them together and like create sort of a slideshow that we could put on our website.
Yeah, I need to put that on the website, the Facebook. I think that would be great. That's amazing. And then so, you know, next year, I guess you'll have an anniversary in the new location coming up.
Yeah, like we'll 30 years. 40 years.
Yeah, great. So now I'm going to move into the other part. So how we got hooked up together and whatever. Yeah. So
this is what I really like when we had talked a while ago about me being on the podcast. And again, I'm really appreciative that you have me here, but we were with an SMS system for a long time. And in fact, probably many people listening to this podcast know how scary it is to change service management systems. I mean, that's like, that almost might be harder than moving locations. You're giving up everything you did and how you did it. And we did it for a long time with a company called WinWorks. And they were a good company and they were good for us, but they weren't growing to meet the needs that we needed. And so we decided that we wanted to move to something that was more cloud-based, more digital, you know, was a little bit more with the 2022 at the time. So I looked at all of them to some degree. I know just like in car sales, right? When people look at too many cars, your head's spinning and you're actually further away from your decision. You are to it. I chose not to go down a super duper rabbit hole with these. I picked a few, looked at them. I reached out to Autoleap. Autoleap is the company we chose and that we signed up with. And I thought they were really reasonably priced. They had a really good looking interface, super friendly staff. I mean, that's probably what sold me on them is that when we got together with Autoleap, their onboarding team, everybody was great. I'm not going to lie. There were months in the beginning where we talked about like, should we just go back to WinWorks? Because it's hard to switch from an old system and your old habits die hard.
Yeah. Everybody's learned those shortcuts that they need to do to just do the bare minimum and they're fine with it. Yeah.
I mean, when I would go through and close repair orders at the end of the month, like the internals, I used to just whiz through them there. And this was now taking me a long time. And we weren't sure if they were going over to QuickBooks the right way. And all of that stuff. So some heartache, some growing pains. Anyway, I think it was during the pandemic or just after, I was always going for walks with the dog and looking for podcasts to listen to. And I came across your podcast and I was listening to it and it was always very motivational. And there was a couple things, Chris, that I don't know if you coined these phrases, but if you did, hats off to you because rise and grind is freaking awesome.
That's what we do every day, right?
I love it. You say that when I'm walking in the morning with the dog, I want to run home, get dressed and go to work. Rise and grind sounds to me just like we're going to crush today. I love it. I love it. And then another saying that you say, I think you say it as a tag in all your podcasts. You don't know what you don't know. You say it in a certain way.
Right. You don't know what you don't know until you know it, right?
Yeah. Like,
that's the way. Yeah.
So I will say this, you know, I think that there was it was not founded on anything and it wasn't right. But I think I had a little bit of an arrogance about me going, well, I've been doing this my whole life. It's great to listen to someone on a podcast and you get little tidbits here and there. But I'm like, what's someone going to teach me that I don't already know and haven't already been through? And the reality is most of what we talk about, I have been through to some degree. You never take time to really analyze those things and actually talk it through with somebody. You would have probably always just been someone I listened to on a podcast had I not gone to SEMA, and that was last year.
Yep, November.
Yep. I didn't even know you were going to be there. I made it up.
That's just 5 months ago, by the way.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, five months. I didn't know you were going to be there. I wanted to go to the Autoleap booth and kind of see what was going on there and say hi to whoever I might know. And then I saw you, and honestly, it was almost like, for me, listening to your podcast for a couple of years, like a celebrity site. I'm like, yeah, there's Chris Cotton.
Which is so weird to me, because that's not how I see myself at all. But anyway,
no, I know.
It was interesting, yeah.
And then Hunter felt the same way, because, you know, when I started listening to you, I told Mike and Hunter, I'm like, you got to listen to this guy. So we were all kind of like, oh, there's Chris Cotton. Wow. So we got to talking. You were very gracious, and you actually gave us some time, said, hey, why don't you meet back in an hour? We'll sit down and just kind of talk about your shop.
There's actually a less busy booth right next to Autoleaf's booth that we kind of took over their tables and chairs and couches and talked over there for a while. Yeah.
So I will tell you that we talked about just kind of what it would look like if you were our coach. And I wasn't completely convinced yet that this was a path that we should go down, because one of the things I told you was I've got to lower expenses. Expenses are my biggest problem. And, you know, I started talking to you about, well, I'm like cutting my advertising expenses. And first thing you said was, don't do that. That's not your first place to cut. Don't do that. And so I listened to you. I did pivot what I'm doing for advertising, but I didn't really change my budget. I was home for a week or two. You and I had a couple correspondence back and forth. And then we decided to get rolling with you. And that was in, I think, maybe the end of November when we had our first official meeting.
Right.
So here's what I'll say. The proof's in the pudding, right? I cannot, on every meeting that we have, put a finger on what was the thing we talked about that made us the money that it made us that week or whatever. What I can do, though, is say that from December 2023 was a banner December. I told you at the end of December, I even told you this between you and I without the service advisors. I'm like, I'm worried about January and February. Because in our industry, in the Northeast, where the winter is horrible, January, February, March are not the kindest months to us. First quarter is always the rough one. And I said, you know, I just don't want to have another first quarter where I spend the whole year catching up, just getting back. We had talked about some things as to what to do, and I don't have them off the top of my head right now, but I could definitely articulate that into some notes if your listeners wanted them. We touched on some things. We got Mike and Hunter super excited. We wound up having a better January, not only than any January we ever had. We had a better January than I think we ever had any other month ever. We did $250,000 in January just in service, you know, not to mention what the body shop did and what sales did. And then February came. And then I came to you in January and said, I'm really worried about February. Maybe January was just a fluke. Maybe December was just a fluke. I feel like the other shoe's going to drop now or something. And well, we had a dismal February in 23. We crushed it by about $80,000 in 24. And then we just closed out a really great March. So we are in really good shape for the rest of the year. And the next three quarters are moneymakers. I feel very confident that we're going to have a great year this year. And even though we've had great years prior to being with you, we're not struggling as hard to get to the numbers we need to get to. The guys love having our meetings every Wednesday. I love having someone like a friend that I can text and go, hey, I got this problem. What do you think? And it doesn't happen too often, but I can bounce something off you and you can be like, did you think of this or did you think of that?
Right.
And I'm like, shoot, no, I didn't think of that. After 30 something years, I did not think of that. Thank you for bringing that up.
You know, that's the different side of it. That's also, gosh, in my career, I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of shops from all over the country. I very rarely hear something that I haven't seen before or worked with. I think if you go back to December and you're telling me all the reasons why you're going to have a crappy January, and I think it basically boiled down to me saying, I'm not going to accept that from you. This is the plan that we're going to do. And then just, I basically said, suck it up, go out and do it.
Yeah, and we did. And actually, Hunter really ran with it. So in January, one of the things we did was we put this board together and he makes this like thermometer, like you see when they're raising money for some fundraiser or something. He's got this thermometer and every day he marks down where we're at for the month. And he has it in the back shop. And honestly, we have such a great crew. They're all engaged. Our shop, by the way, is not a flat rate shop. We are a straight time shop. These guys work 40 hours. They get paid 40 hours. They get paid well. Sometimes there's overtime, but we try not to have overtime. We do have 10 techs. We don't usually need overtime, but our guys are super invested in the company. They've all, for the most part, been with us a long time. We do have three younger guys that are sort of apprentices. We're working with them. We're taking our whole crew to STX in a couple weeks. By having you, Chris, to, you know what it is? It's like you're a spotlight, right? We can go through the grind of every day and we know some of these things that we have to address, but we never sit down to talk about them. Just the most basic thing with having a coach is you're forced to once a week talk about the stuff for an hour. And then the ideas start to flow from there, right? And sometimes it's the idea that leads to the idea. And sometimes the idea's right there. There's no doubt in my mind that the cost associated with having a coach, the cost associated with being part of 20 groups, I mean, these things that I never did before. My father was probably not super for these things because I also grew up with that mentality of going, what's someone going to teach me that I don't already know? There's a lot to know. You can be the smartest person in this business and there's still a lot of things you don't know.
And there's so many different things going on technology-wise, everything else. Like, it's really hard to keep your eye on it. Probably for your dad too, growing up in the time period he did, like any extra dollar that wasn't going to the bottom line is just a wasted dollar probably. And I think even though, you know, we tell people like our average experience is you get a 9x return on investment. That was probably something that they never even thought about. But then too, coaching wasn't a thing then, I don't think, or 20 groups might have been like a new thing, but not super round.
I'm in two 20 groups, one for sales, which are dealer owners, and then another, which is a service 20 group. Just the ideas, the support you have from these other dealers. They're not in your market, so you don't have to worry about it being competition. I also think that, I don't know, the landscape's changed a little bit, at least here in Rochester. I don't feel like it's such an aggressively competitive market. I feel like all the shops sort of work together, at least the decent ones. No one's really out to get the other. It wasn't always that way. I think why we've always sort of tucked ourselves in and we were like on our own island because we were a little afraid of anybody knowing what went into our sauce. But I don't think that's the right way to maneuver at this point.
No, for sure. Like, again, a rising tide lifts all boats, right? So if we're all in it together, we're all working, then we can all make each other better. And again, I'll say, you know, you guys have jumped in and done everything that we've asked. Just going back to December, we haven't even looked at really increasing car count at this point. I think, Hunter, this morning, I still haven't noted down here, with all of our sales increases and everything in this first quarter, we only had 52 more cars this quarter than we did first quarter last year. For us, growing the car count and still working on average repair order is good. But, you know, we worked just DVI process, average repair order, average estimate, things like that to kind of push us to where we're at. I mean, it's fun having you guys in there now. And now we have a third. So there's actually four of you in the meetings now with you, Hunter, Matt, and Mike. So that's interesting. It's a great time. You guys are doing really, really well. I'm ready to fast forward to the end of the year just to see where we're at.
Yeah, I feel like we've got good things coming. We've grown our shop too. I think when my father passed away, we had 18 employees and one of them was a part-time. And now we have 24 full-time employees. We've completely redone our shop. And that's another thing. Like, my dad's always ringing in my ear. And I just remember a year and a half ago, walking through the shop and thinking how dirty it was and going, man, it wasn't that dirty. In fact, a lot of people still say we had one of the cleanest shops then, but to me, it was dirty. There was some garbages that were overflowing. The floor was cracking. And I'm like, I just thought to myself, if my father would walk in today, he'd be like, Mark, come in my office. We got to talk. Why isn't the garbage out? What's going on here? What, the floor doesn't look great. So we went and revamped the whole shop. It looks, you could see it if you go to like our Google My Business page at Universal Imports. Like, we've done a lot to make our shop look as if your car was in a doctor's office. I've even had surgeons say that our shop floor is as clean as some of the operating floors they've seen. So when they say that, I know we're headed down the right path.
Right. Doing really, really good. Awesome.
I can't thank you enough for taking us on. And I just think that we have just great, great things to do. There's always so many ideas still left to be, you know, nurtured, and it's going to be a fun year.
You know, the Zoom calls, because we're doing that mostly now from the coaching side of it, there's always a direction that we want to go in, but then it's all the other ideas and the idea sharing that take us where we go. And then you look up and you're like, oh my gosh, it's been 45 minutes and it feels like we just got started, but we talked about so much. And that's really, really good. I mean, that's where it is. Again, it's one thing I didn't have when I first bought my shop was, and I think I've talked about this, when I went home at the end of the day, I didn't have a board of directors to be held accountable by. And in the beginning, I would talk to Kimberly and Kimberly be, how was your day? And I'd be, all I remember was all the bad stuff that happened. So that's all we talked about at the dinner table. And then after about a month of that, she's like, well, if that's how every day is, I didn't want to talk to you about it. I don't want that in my life. And then so I lost that. And it's just you as the owner with all the responsibility, no accountability. And at least when you know you have to take that phone call, Zoom call or whatever, it's like Hunter, like, oh crap, I forgot to do this and I've got to meet with Chris in 30 minutes or whatever. That's what it's all about.
And adversely, when there's something great, he's come to me on Tuesdays going, oh, I can't wait for our meeting tomorrow because I can't wait to tell Chris about this. I'm like, well, tell me.
I'm right here. Yeah.
It's a mindset. It's a very healthy thing. And now we're talking. Hunter has a meeting with our, before we got going with you, Chris, we did not have meetings with our staff on a regular basis. We talked about it forever. It never mobilized. Now Hunter has a meeting every morning, 8 o'clock. It's usually 5 minutes. Sometimes it's corny and it's some little pep talk. Sometimes it's some serious stuff we've got to figure out. But every morning we have a service meeting. Every Wednesday we have a meeting with the high level guys with you. I'm meeting with my sister and my mother every couple days about different important things. I think that's a big part of the success of a dealership is, you know, my father, he always knew the numbers. I think a lot of dealerships still run where they like, they don't know where their month is until after the month is over. They might not even know. Some of them might not even know until the year is over. I don't know.
Yeah. Some of them are pretty bad, like several months. Yeah.
I mean, we literally have our finger on it almost every day. Like we know when our daily average is going down and then we got to figure out a way to pick it back up. And all of those things that we've put in place, we've put in place since December. I mean, I've always kept an eye on the numbers. That part we've always done, but having the meetings, being more regimented to get that stuff done, we've been doing since, you know, we've been on AutoLeap and then more so since we've been with you.
Right. That's all awesome. Anything else you want to go over or talk about? Or,
you know, I think that the plan for the future is, like I said, Hunter and James are going to keep growing the service and body shop. I have people in sales that as I get them to do more, I will do less in sales and sort of just become like kind of the figurehead and walk around and just say hi to people and have a cup of coffee with a customer when they're in the meeting room. My mother's the same way. She just loves to work. She loves to be here. She loves to work. My sister does all the things my mother does, but my mother just loves doing it. And then it's also a place where my wife and I get to spend each day together too.
So. Right. That's awesome. Speaking of your mother or Oma, does she still cook like stuff from Germany?
Oh my gosh, does she? Yeah. So we have lunch over at my mom's house pretty much every Sunday. And it's usually Schweinebraten or Schnitzel or Sauerbraten or... So Nürnberg, their city, they're famous for their sausage. There's these Nürnberger Bratwurst that we get from the German butcher here and we'll put those on with my mom's potato salad and a nice wheat beer or something like that. It's quite good. We're very blessed.
Kimberly and I are going to have to visit. I guess we'll, of course, Carm's listening. We're going to have to visit New York and definitely going to have to come by on Sunday and visit.
Absolutely welcome.
Visit your mother and have dinner and then see what kind of dessert she's got going on there. I'm sure it's wonderful.
Yeah, you are always welcome. It would be great to have you.
Thank you so much, Mark, for being a client, a part of my life, a part of AutoFix. I know we've only been together like 5-6 months, but it's been a really, really good 5-6 months. We'll just keep pushing that forward.
It's honestly easy to feel like we've known each other for 5 or 6 years at this point. So,
right. Yeah.
Our lives are much richer having you in them. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for being a part of the show today.
Thanks.
A big shout out to our listeners. Your dedication to growth fuels our passion. And let's not forget our fantastic sponsor, Shop Marketing Pros, who make sure this show is accessible to you. Where quality meets visibility, Shop Marketing Pros ensures your European or diesel repair shop stands out in a crowded market. Thanks for tuning into the Weekly Blitz. Remember, it's time to rise, grind, and keep your mindset positive. Until next time, this is Chris Cotton signing off. And one more rise and grind for Mark Schreierbrocker. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Weekly Blitz with Coach Chris Cotton on the AftermarketRadioNetwork.com. Follow Chris on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Chris is all for advancing the aftermarket.